NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant making, leadership training, and convening. We invite you to visit the Main Street website at www.npr.org, where today's broadcast will be available for later listening. You can also hear our series of reports and commentaries on treaty rights and tribal sovereignty, and view a historic collage of Native photographs from the Minnesota History Center. The address again for the Main Street website, www.npr.org. Good morning, and welcome to a special Main Street radio show on treaty rights and tribal sovereignty. I'm Rachel Reby. We're broadcasting from the Mille Lacs Indian Museum this morning, located 2 hours north of the Twin Cities on the shore of Mille Lacs Lake, which we can see right out the window here. The huge lake, 14 miles wide, 17 miles long, is blue and beautiful today. Today, April 21st, is actually the typical ice out day on Mille Lacs Lake. But in this unusual year, the ice went out 10 days ago on April 11th. By now, you've heard about the 1837 treaty, the agreement between the U.S. government and eight bands of Ojibwe Indians, including the Mille Lacs. The treaty itself is short and plain spoken. The Indians gave up or ceded land, what would become 12 counties in east-central Minnesota, plus part of northwest Wisconsin. In exchange, the federal government provided the bands with cash, tobacco, farm implements, blacksmith tools, and the right to hunt and fish on the ceded territory. For years, the tribes did exactly that. Mille Lacs was a great fishing lake long before it became a tourist destination. The band's oral history project taped dozens of interviews with tribal elders, Ojibwe who remember the lake and their traditions as they used to be.
Schools of fish would come up to the shore when I was a young fella. You just took what you wanted. You didn't have to sit there all day like you do now, and you're lucky to get one fish.
No one ever got hungry. They helped each other out, the Indians. They would not go hungry as long as there was rabbits and fish and deer.
There was a lot of fish then, like when we were at Murray Beach. It was shallow, sandy there, and the Nordens would be that long, 4 feet long.
One time we lived out here by the lake. They were fishing early in the spring, the Indians. Sometimes the ice would still be on the shore. There was a lot of fish.
They always fish. Indians, they always fish. Oh, they had ways they survived. Years ago, you know, there was no laws for hunting, fishing, nothing like that. Indians got along good.
Almost 8 years ago, the Mille Lacs band filed suit against the state of Minnesota, hoping to win back their treaty rights. After a long, contentious fight, the 1837 treaty was upheld in federal court. This spring, the Ojibwe are once again netting and spearing walleye on lakes in the ceded territory, including Mille Lacs Lake. Welcome to our program. Our phone number today, 1-800-537-5252, if you would like to call with your comment or question. Phone number 1-800-537-5252. Joining me today at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum are Don Wadle, Commissioner of Natural Resources for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and Tribal Elder Doug Sam. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
Doug Sam, let's start with you. You told me that you are the fourth generation of Ojibwe living on this lake. Your great-grandparents, your grandparents, your parents lived here. You grew up here fishing in these waters. This spring, for the first time in a very long time, you were back out on Mille Lacs Lake with a net going after fish. How did that feel?
Well, great. Without outside restriction, it was great fishing out there.
Tell me a little bit about your netting experiences so far this year. Did you go out in a power boat, go out in a fishing boat?
Oh, we went out in a canoe. And I have a 50-foot net. So.
Tell me, once you get out there with the net, how far offshore were you fishing? For those people who don't understand this whole process, lay it out a little bit for us so they understand what we talk about when we say netting fish.
Well, we went out about 100 feet from the shore, on the edge of the rock line, so probably about 10 feet of water.
What time did you go out?
We went out at about 7 in the evening and picked up the nets in the designated area set by the DNR.
So you leave the nets in the lake overnight. You leave, come back about 12 hours later.
Correct.
Kind of exciting to come back and wonder what's in the net?
Well, yeah, it was surprising to see all that fish.
Let's talk about, you pulled up the net and what was in it?
Walleyes.
A lot of walleyes.
A lot of walleyes, maybe one or two northerns.
So you put the net in the bottom of the boat, came back to shore,
correct,
and then pulled the fish out of the net.
Right.
What did you do with the fish? What did you do with the fish? You told me you got 25 fish, maybe?
Well, what we did was we filleted them, cleaned them all, and gave them all to elders and certain people that went out there. So.
And their reaction to getting this fresh walleye from Mille Lacs Lake?
Well, that's what everybody's waiting for, and they're very glad to get them.
What was it like when you were a kid living on this lake? What were the? Tell me a little bit about the fishing then, the fishing you did with your dad.
Well, in them days, we always had maybe unwritten agreement that the tribes had 100 feet off the shore. I don't know if it was just, I think, an agreement that we had, and all we fished for in them days were, in the fall, were tulipies. And we got hundreds, hundreds.
And what'd you do with all those fish?
Well, we smoked them, and we salted bear whistle. That was our diet for the winter.
Did you get tired of fish during the winter?
Well, smoked fish, but you always crave for the fresh fish in the spring.
You fished for what your family needed.
Right, subsistence sale.
Tell the story you told me about coming home with that big fish and your dad's reaction.
Yeah, that was I was a little boy. I was riding my bike, and I seen fins sticking out of the swamp. And so I went up and borrowed a spear and come back and speared it. I had a terrible time getting him out. I finally got him out close to the road, and I took the spear back where I borrowed. I come back, put him on my bike. He was so big, you know. He was dragging. I was pedaling down the road, and I got him home. My dad says, "What are you going to do with that fish?" I said, "We're going to eat him." He said, "All that?" I said, "I told you to get a smaller fish, not that size."
He didn't want the part that you dragged home on the gravel bed. That's probably it.
Yeah. Well, we just wanted something for one meal, see.
So the point wasn't to harvest the entire lake of fish.
No, we're just hungry for fish. I got a fish that was too big for our family size. So.
During these past number of years, Doug, as you have seen the rights to fish in the lake eroded, and this has actually been in your growing up years, did you just stop fishing, or did you go out on a launch with the rest of the tourists here and try to fish every once in a while to get some walleye?
Well, I guess we got cross-culturized and became sportsmen. So.
Define that to me. When you say, well, yeah, I go out sport fishing, how does that differ from what you've talked about just now?
Well, you cast out there, I guess, for a trophy fish and stuff like that. And, you know, but
which way do you prefer doing it?
Well, for eating purpose, well, then that's okay. But if you want to have fun, you go out in a bunch.
So you like the right to do both?
Right. That's why I said I was going cross-culturalized.
Our number this morning at Mille Lacs, 1-800-537-5252. And you really have the right to net fish, as you've already talked about today, and also spear fish.
Right.
Spearing fish, netting fish, which is more difficult?
Probably netting. Because when you pull the fish, you've got to put them out of the net, and you can see my hands are full of cuts and bruises. And
so netting is more difficult because you're pulling all the fish out of the net.
That's correct.
And with a spear, you just pick it up.
Pick what you want. Okay.
You told me spearing happens at night.
Right.
So what happens? You go out in a boat.
Well, you see there are little eyes, and I guess I didn't spear yet this year, but I think size is hard to figure in the water because of the regulation. Yeah.
There's only a certain size of fish. You have to get over a certain size.
Right.
Don, let's talk about spearing and netting. Are they both equally popular at different times of year, or is it just something that you're used to, what you might go for?
I think it varies from tribe to tribe. One of the things that in Wisconsin we saw that tribes tended to spear, Mille Lacs people tended to be more netters, that they had used nets and tended to use nets now and prefer nets, I think, to spearing. Nets are a pretty efficient method of fishing. I think the statistics that we'll talk about later about sizes and numbers of fish and sex of fish that have been harvested indicate that you can be real selective with netting, and that was really the goal of the bands department, the natural resources, and the state to try to selectively fish. Spearing, it's a little more difficult. You have to judge the size of the fish.
When you're dealing with a moving object, this isn't something stuffed in the water in the boat.
Right.
I mean, trying to picture the coordination to do that and trying to figure out on the fly whether that's a 15-inch fish or not would be
very
difficult.
Yes.
What does it mean when we hear the term ceremonial fish? We want to harvest the lake as part of a ceremony, the ceremonial harvest. What does that actually mean?
Well, there are a number of types of ceremonies that involve fish. In general, the tribe, through its religious activities and culture, has various things that it uses fish for. And a percentage of these fish that are being harvested are used in those types of ceremonies. And one of those is to give thanks for living through the winter and the Creator providing new fresh food for everyone in the spring, and those are things that the tribe has done years and years. Before the implementation of treaty rights, it was very difficult to get fish to do these types of ceremonies or feasts to indicate that there is giving thanks for surviving the winter and the Creator's support of new fresh foods for everyone for the summer.
Doug, when you took those fish out of the net, the first time that you have netted in this lake for years and years and years, and you told me you presented some to your dad and you gave some to the tribal elders that would not be able to get out and fish themselves, was there a sense of ceremony in that, or of them accepting that not just as, gee, Doug, thanks for the fish dinner, but a sense of thank you for giving this back to us?
No, I think it's expected deal anyway. And one thing I forgot to tell you, before we got on the lake, he offered to back up the Great Spirit. We're giving you this fish. So.
And your netting experience this spring included all those things.
Right.
When treaty rights were restored, it wasn't exactly back to the way it used to be. It wasn't, Doug, was it, like you used to fish with your dad 50 years ago?
No.
Because people were watching you.
Right.
Your fish were weighed. They were measured. They were sexed. They were recorded. There was a lot more to do than just pick the fish out of the net and go home.
Right. They did. The DNR was there and measured all the fish. But I guess that little inconvenience, it served its purpose for what you wanted, you know.
So that didn't bother you?
No.
Is it bothering some of the people on this reservation, do you think, Don, who are like, this is a victory now that we get to count these fish and spend this time at the landing having these gone over and over and over?
I think there are some people who believe that, you know, that impacts their feelings about the fish and how the harvest is being done. But the band is also very committed to making sure that the harvest of tribal members is well documented, and the fundamental issue about fish populations is to know how many are being harvested and have good numbers on that, and the tribe is very committed to doing that, and in general tribal members believe that it's a good practice to make this work.
Because you have no more interest in fishing out this lake than anybody does.
That's correct. The band wants to have fish there, always wants to have fish there, and we'll do everything possible to make sure that the fish population is sustained and increases even.
We have Richard from St. Paul on the phone with us. Good morning, sir. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good morning. I am not against you fishing. I don't want to make it sound this way, but I'm curious. The Indians feel that we, the white people, stole the land from them and forced them into treaties. Now, the Ojibwe are not native to this region. They come from Canada, and they were able to chase the Dakota out of the region you're in now because you had guns and they had bows and arrows. Now, I don't feel, or never read, where the Ojibwe ever compensated the Dakota Indians for taking their land away from them. What do you feel about that?
Well, Tom, how would you respond to that, or Doug?
I would just respond, and I don't think what we got in Minnesota, Norwegian Swedes, and we were never reimbursed for our land either.
I think that there is that misconception that there was not an understanding between the Ojibwe or Chippewa or the Sioux and the Dakota people, and that is incorrect. In 1825, there was a treaty between what was then called the Great Chippewa Nation and the Great Sioux Nation, and that treaty defined whose territory was which, how that was all going to work. And that's well documented in law, and the issues that some people like to project, that some compensation due or things, they would have to go back to those agreements show that was done and the tribes had agreed to it in 1825.
Our phone number this morning is 1-800-537-5252. If you have a question or a comment, feel free to call us. Don Wadle, this was an 8-year fight. How expensive of a fight was it? How much money did the tribe have to raise to fight this thing through for 8 years?
Well, initially this action was started in the early 80s. And one of the fundamental concerns of the band was making sure that it had adequate resources to litigate this issue. And so from 1982 to 1990, one of the things that the band tried to do was develop a fund that would enable the band to see through the litigation of this issue. We anticipated that it would cost about somewhere between $0.5 and $0.75 million to do this litigation. We had raised that money over that period of time. And then in August of 90, we filed the case. Actually, the case cost us about almost $2 million to litigate. And
could you have done it without the money coming in from the casino?
Yes. The casino really did not have a bearing upon whether or not we were going to do this litigation. Although they simultaneously happened, there really was not the need, or we had already secured enough revenue sources that we could have litigated this issue absent the casino at all.
8 years, almost $2 million. Has it been worth it?
Oh, I think definitely it has. There's many, many issues in regards to how the treaty right was perceived by tribal members, how they will use and implement these treaty rights as far as nutrition, using them for food, and ceremonial uses that will help strengthen their culture and religious activities, plus just the affirmation that they were not wrong, that your parents, tribal parents, were telling their children that these are rights that the band has, and many times people would be arrested because nobody would believe them, and really the vindication of you know, the understanding of the tribal elders and parents and grandparents had about these agreements and how they weren't being fulfilled, and the necessity of having to go to court to make this finalized and complete.
Let's talk about how many Indians are exercising their rights. We have one here. Doug said he's been out in the boat with his net. Do you have any idea, just give me a rough figure, Don, how many people do you think so far this year have exercised their rights under the 1837 treaty?
I think that right as of this today, we've had probably 50 or 60 people who applied and went out. It's difficult to get a good number on that because sometimes three or four people will go together to set one net, and you know, then they'll share the fish amongst themselves, but yet only one permit is required. So you may have more people than the actual number of permits that have benefited from this activity.
Is that a number that you would have predicted? If I'd asked you a year ago how many would go out?
I think I was using somewhere 30 to 50 people would probably go out. I think we'll see an increase over the next couple of years as people
relearn it. Do you have people in your family, Doug, that wouldn't have a clue? They'd be about where I am in terms of learning how to net or spear?
That's correct. My kids wouldn't have no idea how to get them. In fact, I took my grandson out, and he learned a lot that night.
Does it need to be able to teach him?
That's right. He was real happy.
Don, are there other people on this reservation who say, our rights have been restored under the 1837 treaty, and I'm not going to get a permit?
So far, that hasn't been the case, although we have, the last 2 days, suspended the activities till we reevaluate to see where we are. We've had some people who fished more than other people.
You want to spread it around because you have a finite number of fish that you're taking out of this lake this year.
Yes, and we want to preserve some of that quota so that tribal members will be able to get fish throughout the summer and in the fall, and also some winter fishing. So if they choose to have some fresh fish later on in the seasons, they can do that. And so part of our job in the department is to make sure that there will be adequate fish for all the members throughout the season, and we're working on that and dealing with that.
We have John from Bemidji on the phone. Good morning. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, Mr. Sam or Mr. Waddell, whichever wishes to respond to my thing here. I know that the Red Lake Band north of Bemidji has pretty much collapsed the fishery in lower Red Lake and more than half of upper Red Lake. And that's due to their own regulated over-harvest of the lake for commercial fishing. Is there going to be commercial fishing on Mille Lacs? And the second part of my question is, when are white people going to be finished with the guilt trip to Native American people, and what would it take to be done? I realize that things happened years ago that were incorrect, unkind, and improper, both to the Native Americans, the blacks, and the Japanese, for that matter. But we need to get on with things. We've given people ancient treaty rights, casinos, affirmative action. When will we all be one race of human beings and move on?
Don, why don't you respond to that?
Yes, I think, you know, in general, we are one race. There are agreements out there that specifically define different things for different people. And in this particular case, there's agreement that allows tribal members to hunt and fish. And I don't think that that's any kind of a guilt trip. Maybe if there's any guilt to be bore, it's that no one has apologized for infringing upon the tribal right to hunt fish over the last 50 years. Usually when people take something that don't belong to them, they acknowledge that somehow.
Don, let's respond to the first part of the question about Red Lake. This is a question that has come up quite a few times in the eight-year battle. People say, remember what happened in Red Lake. And again, that was also one of the top walleye fisheries in the state of Minnesota. And now, it's true what he says, it is almost fished out.
Red Lake, lower Red Lake, does have significant problems with their walleye harvest. I think one of the things that people need to understand is that Red Lake, the tribal government has stopped the fishery up there, which has really impacted their community somewhere between $8 to $10 million in revenue that's been taken out of this community, which does not have huge economic potentials. One of the things and concerns is that as fish numbers decline, the effects on the economy, and I think that's one example. there's many, many players in the involvement with the fishery at Red Lake. The Bureau of Indian Affairs has the overriding obligation to ensure the enforcement and protection of that resource. Those things have not quite worked out the way that it should have. There are some environmental conditions up there as far as water levels that have hurt the spawning walleye. So there are a number of things that involve with the area of commercial fishing on Red Lake. Red Lake is the sole regulator, manager, in the sense of harvesting fish from Lower Red Lake, and that is a problem they're dealing with and are faced with. And it's a very complex issue from the standpoint of harvest.
But in your mind, it's not going to happen at Mille Lacs Lake.
You know, it can happen at Mille Lacs Lake. The thing that everyone has to do is understand the fishery. They have to understand the numbers of fish that are being harvested. One of the things that the tribe has done is developed a very, very intense and highly regulated fishery, much more than, you know, the general fisheries. And as a result, we will know the tribal harvest. And everyone needs to abide by the rules and regulations out there to ensure that harvests and the correct number of fish can be counted and monitored.
We'll be back with this special edition of Main Street Radio, live from the shore of Mille Lacs Lake in central Minnesota, right after this. NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant-making, leadership training, and convening. Our statewide forecast, you can expect mostly sunny skies across Minnesota today with highs in the 60s, clear skies with temperatures in the 30s tonight, and for tomorrow, mostly sunny again and warmer. Tomorrow in Minnesota, highs in the mid-60s and the lower 70s. Right now in the Twin Cities, we have 56 degrees. Good morning, I'm Rachel Reby, and we're broadcasting live from the Minnesota Historical Society's Mille Lacs Indian Museum, where exhibits tell the story of the Ojibwe Indians who settled here on the shores of Mille Lacs Lake in the mid-1700s. We're continuing our conversation on the 1837 treaty and how it's going to affect Minnesota's most popular walleye lake. My guests, Don Wadle, Commissioner of Natural Resources for the Mille Lacs Ojibwe, and Tribal Elder Doug Sam. Joining the conversation now is Henry Van Offlin, treaty biologist for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Good morning, Henry. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments, 1-800-537-5252. We have Pierre on the phone from Minneapolis. Good morning.
Good morning. General question, comment regarding treaty rights. Not so much local as how I understand natives from this area are recognized by indigenous peoples internationally as highly sophisticated in their understanding of these rights and leadership, demonstrating leadership at an international level, particularly the UN, United Nations Peoples Organization. My question has to do with how we recognize this sophistication or this relationship to land, and that this isn't about property rights, it's about how Native peoples demonstrate leadership and use of land, and how we all need to respect that we don't well enough, and as a society especially. So this is like our common property, and these people know how to use it well, and we deserve, they deserve our attention to learn how to do it. And so it's not about rights, it's about the teaching of ways, of good ways. And I'll
Don, your response
close
to
with
that.
Thank you.
In general, the tribe is trying very hard to incorporate traditional values of the tribe into modern contemporary types of activities of management and the use of resources?
As we've said, this is the first spring that Indians are spearing and netting fish on Mille Lacs Lake in many, many years. Henry, from your position as treaty biologist with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, explain to us how that's going to affect the fish population. The call came in already today talking about Red Lake, which is everybody's worst nightmare come true, that somehow we will drain this huge lake of walleye. How is it going to affect it?
Well, I mean, it's very true that Mille Lacs is a world-class walleye fishery. And given the management protocols and assessment work that we do, there is absolutely no reason to believe that it won't continue to be a world-class walleye fishery, even with a small amount of banned harvest like we're seeing this year.
Explain to me what the average amount of walleye, how many walleye do we take out of this lake in a year?
Yeah, we've been conducting assessment work and intensive assessment since the early 80s, and the average amount of pounds of fish taken out of here by anglers over those years and evidence before that is about 450,000 pounds of fish.
And the Indians, under their first harvest, will take how much?
Yeah, this year the bands have been allocated 40,000 pounds underneath their fisheries management plan, so less than one-tenth of the typical average. Now, this year the population isn't at the 450,000-pound level.
So they're taking less than 10% of the of the walleye that will come out of the lake. Don, is that a number that you just came up with and thought this is a good place to start?
Well, we looked at what was being harvested in Wisconsin. That was really the only place that we had some good numbers about how, as tribes implemented the reaffirmed treaty right, that you could measure what was happening. And so through the calculations of what was harvested there, what might be more efficient at Mille Lacs, we've tried to pick a number. Basically, the plan is designed to try to determine what the tribal need is going to be, and that's why the plan is designed over 5 years in increments that will increase if the tribal need increases.
So it's not necessarily that you are going to be taking out 100,000 pounds of walleye in 5 years or in 4 years. It's you will determine that year by year.
Yes, and we will look at, you know, the need for the tribe, allocations of fish, all those types of things in continuing with the five-year management plan.
Yeah, I was going to add that, you know, right now our estimate is that there's about 1.2 or 1.3 million pounds of walleye out in the lake. So, you know, we figured what is a good harvest for this year based on all the science is about 260,000 pounds total.
And Henry, we talk about the ice has only been out for 10 days on Mille Lacs, and the tribe already is coming to their upper limit of what they're harvesting. It went very quickly, 40,000 fish for 60 fishermen?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fish out in the lake, and when they're in shallow, as they have been after ice out, they're able to catch quite a few fish in a short period of time.
It's not exactly 40,000 fish for 60 people.
40,000 pounds of 40, fish,
40,000 pounds of fish, and Mille Lacs gets half of those, so Mille Lacs gets 20,000 pounds. The other 20,000 pounds gets divided up amongst the other seven tribes, and so they're looking at 2,800 pounds of fish, somewhere in that. So those numbers get pretty small pretty quickly, so we're not talking about significant amounts of fish.
Thanks for the clarification. We have George from Northern Minnesota on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a kind of a half comment but question also, and that is I'm confused. Does the Treaty of 1837 specify that in this day, 1998, we can use modern technology to harvest these and spear or net fish? You know, I'm kind of concerned that I'm seeing, you know, halogen lights on the heads, nice quiet electric motors, seven-pronged spears. This is not the technology of 1837, and I wonder how that extrapolated from 1837 to the modern time anyway.
I'm
feel
that. Don, respond to that. Don, have things changed? I know Doug told me before he went on air, he remembers going out with a birch torch to try to locate the fish when he used to spear as a young boy with his dad. This guy now is talking about halogen lights, and certainly things have changed in the past 100 or so years.
Yes, definitely things have changed. There are many modifications to how tribal members can fish, how these things can occur, but the courts have continually affirmed that tribes can use modern adaptations of traditional methods. And the use of a halogen light versus a birch bark torch is just a modern adaptation of traditional methods, gill nets, those types of things, from a twine net to a monofilament net. Those are modern adaptations of traditional methods. We all recognize that there is changes in technology and those things are there.
Department of Natural Resources have any problem with that, Henry?
Well, I think the bottom line is that harvest here is being conducted under a pretty rigorous code. We've got folks out there monitoring the harvest. The bands have folks out there monitoring the harvest. And whether the fish is taken with a halogen beam or not, it's being recorded, and we're keeping track of things.
These fish have never received so much attention in Mille Lacs.
Well, the fish in Mille Lacs have received a lot of attention over the years from us and, of course, from anglers, which are only, the Twin Cities is only 2 hours from here. Mille Lacs has really been a fishing lake. That's what it's known for, and that's what it should continue to be.
We have Rich from Minneapolis on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning. I believe my question is being answered as we speak, but I'm wondering your specific method by which you do monitor the harvest.
In general, netting or spearing requires a daily permit. They have to identify the landing that they're going to leave from or return to. There has to be a crew there that will monitor the catch. It can be biologists and or game wardens, and usually it's both. And that's all done on a daily basis.
Yeah, and from our perspective, we've had conservation officers and DNR fisheries folks out at certainly every spearing permit that's been issued just about, and also virtually every time a net's been lifted, someone has been around observing, watching, and keeping track.
Henry, where have all these people come from? Do you have an entire army of game wardens that are now spending their days and nights on Mille Lacs Lake? Where do you come up with the people to do all this?
Well, our fishery staff has, we do have other activities which we are normally involved in the spring. We've just tried to make a go of it with transferring some of those folks to working more evenings, and the enforcement folks really would be better at answering what enforcement's done. But what I've seen is mostly local wardens, out at the accesses.
Our phone number here is 1-800-537-5252 for your questions and comments. This is a special Main Street program. We are talking about treaty rights this hour. Next hour, we will turn our attention to tribal sovereignty. We are broadcasting from the Mille Lacs Indian Museum, where we can see Mille Lacs Lake stretched out right through the glass window. And again, we talked about it is open today. The sun is sparkling on it, and it looks like a beautiful place to fish. We have an audience with us here at the museum. Leif Enger's in the audience with a question.
Hello. Vince Merrill is part of the audience here today. He is a Mille Lacs band member. He also works here at the museum, so we didn't have any extra distance to come. And he's got a question for Don Wadle, the Natural Resources Commissioner of the band.
Aline, Don.
Aline.
This is a simple question, and it kind of has to do with the fishing. And I was wondering how a lot of people felt about the people that actually do traditional fishing, that go out and harvest for ceremonies and different activities like that. And, I personally feel that, if I go out fishing for an elder, that I'm going out on the orders of an elder, not having to go out and get a permit and be regulated by anybody that DNR or so forth. Years ago, when the when elders asked the younger men to go out and get fish, and that was the only kind of law that I pertain to.
Yes, but very good comment, in the sense that that's how traditionally tribal members fish, that there was a very keen respect for the resource and those types of things. Today, things have changed. As the person talked about, you know, using traditional methods to harvest versus modern day methods, there is also the restrictions on the tribal side from the ability of how tribal members used to do it and would like to continue to do that versus how we need to regulate the fishery because of the high use of the fishery and because of various implications that the courts have defined.
Vince, does that make it easier to go get a permit, or do you still think no?
Well, for myself, you know, I feel like going out and getting a permit and, you know, having a bunch of people from the DNR stand around and count my fish and that way, doing that to me kind of hurts my pride a little more than, you know, having my grandmother go and say, hey, would you please go out and get us some fish? We're having a ceremony next week, you know, and not having somebody there counting my fish and touching my fish, you know, and doing that kind of stuff to me, you know, where an elder that I respect comes and asks me to do something, you know, it's not secretive or anything, but asks me to do it like in the olden days, you know, like a lot of elders can't go out and hunt and fish for themselves, so they ask us younger people to go out and get their fish or their deer or whatever, you know, and, you know, I personally feel that, you know, somebody coming to me and saying, hey, man, we want to look at your fish, you know, is a more embarrassment to me and going to tell my elders, well, they counted all the fish, you know. I mean, I know some elders, you know, they wouldn't mind getting a fish that way, but just me personally, you know, that's the way I feel. I was brought up that way. You know, when an elder said to go get something, you went out and got it, you know, no matter if it was treaty or not, you know.
And it takes some of the meaning away.
Yeah, it does to me, because that's the way I was brought up, and that's the way I want to bring up my children. You know, I don't want to have my son say, you know, Dad, you want, you know, when I get older, he'll say, well, you want to get me to go out and get some fish? And then he's got to go through the whole process of getting a permit and then being regulated that way.
Vince, you're not that old. You've probably never been able to legally net or spear on this lake, have you? For your whole growing up years.
No. I've gotten caught before, you know, and that was... you know, I was netting for a powwow and stuff like that, and then I went out and got a permit and stuff, and then when I got caught, I showed them the permit, and it didn't hold water. So, you know, I was doing it for the elders, and I wasn't doing it for my own personal gain.
So it's likely that you will continue to do it that way. You'll net and you'll spear, but you'll be looking over your shoulder.
Yeah. Well, I do ask Don for a permit, you know, but that's for ceremonial purposes. You know, if I went out, you know, netting for my own personal gain, I don't go out, you know. I just do it because, you know, it was a way of life for me when I grew up. You know, when my grandfather and grandmother asked me to go out and get some fish, you know, I didn't question anything, you know, or I didn't seek out the DNR and say, hey, I'd like to come out and get some fish. I just went out.
Don, is it hard to convince your people, here's the 111-page manual, read it, digest it, and follow it. Have you had a sell job with your own people here?
Well, there are certainly concepts and cultural uses of resources that have made it very difficult to find a balance in this issue, and the tribe has tried very hard to find kind of the least restrictive methods so that tribal members can harvest and access these resources. I think one thing that's important is the question about legally harvesting fish. Tribal members, you know, this is what this court case was all about, that they really did have the legal right to harvest fish. It's just that they were being denied that legal right.
We have Kim from Minneapolis on the phone. Go ahead with your question.
I guess I just wanted to comment first on the positive relationship that sounds like the state and the Mille Lacs Band has, and I think that communication and is really great, and I just wanted to comment on that. I also wanted to comment on a previous caller, and when he was speaking of the special treatment, when is that going to be over, he mentioned other minority groups, and I think maybe a portion of his ignorance is in not understanding the difference between Native American and European American philosophy, and maybe if your guest could speak to that a little bit, and for example, the treatment of the earth, the view of the land, and just fishing as compared to our European American sportsmen. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. Tom?
Yes, there are significant differences in the beliefs and fundamental concepts of how tribal people view the resource and how traditional sports person looks at the resource and the way it's utilized and the way the resource has been developed over the years. I'm not opposed to the way the state has developed the use of the resource, and that's fine for how the state has done that. It's just people have to acknowledge and see that the tribe has a different way to use those resources and will continue to implement from a tribal perspective how it'll use its share of the resource.
Peter from the White Earth Reservation is on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been listening to your program, and I've heard several comments from some folks out there, and it's pretty obvious to tell that they still resent the fact that the folks down there are using their rights granted by treaty. And I'd be curious, there's been a lot of talk so far on how the Indians are regulated and how they're looked at and how they're assessed when they come off the lake. I'd be curious. They're spending an awful lot of resources on that. Are they spending as many resources to watch the other anglers who supposedly have a right to those fish? Are they watching them as closely? I'm going to stand by and listen to comment.
Henry, let's ask you that question. Doug talked about every fish was handled, weighed, measured, sexed, identified, classified, written down. What about the 90% of the fish out of this lake that are going to be taken by sport fishermen when fishing opens up in May?
Yeah, well, we are and have been keeping track of our angler harvest since the early 80s on an annual basis in the summer and the winter. We've got, an angler survey, and we're able to make pretty good predictions or estimates of the number of fish harvested. That's where we get numbers like the average is 450,000 pounds. And the precision that we have on our estimates is about plus or minus 12% right now.
So you're not going over, not handling each of those fish, obviously, that come out of the lake. It's more of there are rules and regulations they must follow, and you spot check to make sure they do?
Yeah. Well, we are actively, every day of the week, someone is out there counting boats and interviewing anglers, knowing how many fish, say, an average boat is catching. We expand those numbers out to get a total estimate for the day, adding those by, you know, by the week, by the month, so we get the total harvest for the year.
Jack from Erhard, Minnesota, on the phone with us. Good morning.
Yes, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment on the regulations. What I hear in these comments are regulations that are arising out of Western society. These are foreign regulations. They are based on fundamental management principles that we operate by in the Western world. It has been perceived that American Indian people did not have a civilization. They did not have any rules and principles in how they regulate their resources. Well, that's one of the problems that we have. We have always been perceived as being uncivilized and unable to manage our own resources. We always had management, and it was based on some very fundamental principles that are governing the relationship of all life. And we call those, we want to call them prime directives, or their natural laws. And the natural law is this, that we have a very intimate relationship with all life, and including the fish. One of the problems that we have today is because American Indian people at large are culturally bankrupt. They don't have the kind of respect that they had with these species many years ago. And so we've taken the mentality from the Western world, and we perceive them as things that we can count in terms of the crude materialistic form. And so we try to regulate that in terms of in that process. What do we have in when we talk about tradition? We're talking about each individual making that part of their daily life and their daily religion.
Don, do you agree with the question of it's a perception question, it's a different way of looking at things?
Well, clearly the tribal perspective of the use of the resources is different than the general state perspective or tourism economic system that has been developed over the use of those resources. And one of the things that we've tried very hard to do is to match the things that are from the science, those types of things that we have to deal with, the numbers of fish being harvested, and the cultural needs and issues that the tribe has.
So Vince said it would be difficult for him to take the fish that he gathered for ceremonial harvest and have them touched and weighed and measured. Yes. For you, you would do that?
Yes, that's...
Because you would realize that's what needed to be done to protect the harvest.
Right, and to allow access to these resources. And absent that, we would not have access to those resources. And hence, it's important that we have some of these things that have to occur.
Does this attitude make your life easier, Henry?
Yeah, it certainly does. You know, there are a lot of regulations that band members need to follow, and we can track harvest. And the bottom line is we need to track harvest. We need to track how many fish are out there in order to ensure that, you know, the great fishing continues.
Have you been surprised at the almost lack of controversy? We all followed what happened in Wisconsin a number of years ago with the crowds and the shouting and the violence that we saw in Wisconsin. The Minnesota legislature a year ago appropriated a huge amount of money to make sure there wasn't that kind of violence when it happened this year in our state. And yet, Henry, have there been incidents that we just haven't heard about, or has it been almost...
I think things have been very calm. Things have been running pretty smoothly, and I hope that continues. I think it's a credit to the sportsmen of Minnesota that this is how things have gone.
Yes, I see it too as also that the sheriffs and have done an excellent job of communicating with people, of making people understand the relationship here that's been affirmed through the court system and the implementation of these things, and that it's really a good feeling to see that many, many people have learned that this can occur. It can occur in a reasonable manner, that it's not just kind of a wholesale type of thing out there, and that everyone is watching and making sure that this comes off very efficient and well-managed activity.
So when you looked ahead and thought about this time, is this how it should happen? Is this the best case scenario that we're seeing on Mille Lacs? And we've talked about the harvest is almost completed, so we're not talking about, gee, what could happen tonight or what could happen tomorrow. Yeah. We've come through it almost.
Right. I do think that it's been a very good scenario as to how this can be implemented. The fear of the sky falling in is dissipated. We devoted a lot of energy over the last 10 years to try to make sure that people understood that there was appropriate information out there that people could access so that they could understand about how these things would be implemented, and tried to assure people that this was a very highly managed and regulated fishery.
And this is a continuing conversation, as we've talked about, Henry. Things are being monitored, so things can be continually adjusted.
That's exactly right. You know, we will continue to do what we did last year to get to this point.
We're halfway through this special Main Street Radio show, coming to you live from the Mille Lacs Indian Museum on the shore of Mille Lacs Lake. My guests have been Don Wadle, Natural Resources Commissioner for the band, Tribal Elder Doug Sam, and Henry Van Offlin, Treaty Biologist for the Department of Natural Resources. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. We spent the first hour of our show talking about treaty rights, agreements between two sovereign nations, in this case, the U.S. government and the Ojibwe Indians. Next hour, we're going to talk more about tribal sovereignty, the right of Indians to govern themselves and control their own affairs. It's all ahead as we continue this live Main Street Radio broadcast from the Mille Lacs Indian Reservation after the news.